Hello, I am Emily Hazard.
And I'm Becca Anderson.
And this is Grey's Anatomy Uncut, a podcast where we discuss and analyze episodes of Grey's Anatomy. Today we're on Season 3, Episode 9, From a Whisper to a Scream. Excellent title. That is a song that was originally sung by Elvis Costello. Not Presley. Original air date is November 23rd, 2006, which was actually Thanksgiving Day, which is kind of amazing to me how much TV has changed, because they would never air something on Thanksgiving Day,
right? Besides football.
yeah, whatever. This was, like, pre the, like, I kind of think is stupid, like, fall finale. Whatever. This is, like, before all that, where, like, TV shows would easily produce 25 to 27 episodes a season. Mm-hmm. Written by Kip Koenig and directed by Julie Ann Robinson. So this has 18.51 million viewers, which is down from last week. And also, it is the first episode since 2015 to have less than 20 million viewers.
Which is probably because it was Thanksgiving
Day. Exactly. Yeah, probably because it was Thanksgiving Day, but, like, well done, Grey's Anatomy. I mean, that is something that you can hang your hat on.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sweet. We also got a new review, 5-star review on iTunes, so I wanted to shout that out. Thank you for those of you who continue to give us reviews and continue to listen. It really means a lot. If you had told me, like, you know, I don't know, 10 years ago, that I'd have a BFF to talk to about Grey's Anatomy and then have find other maniacs that are just as addicted. I mean, that's amazing. So thanks, Ray Alyssa, for that review.
Yeah.
Do you want to do an opening statement?
Sure. The first thing I have to say is I love how, like, any other show that would have an episode come out on Thanksgiving Day would be like, oh, we're going to make this all about, like, Thanksgiving and, like, with love turkey and all of this stuff, and Grey's Anatomy is like, no, we're gonna have an episode about betrayal.
I'm gonna stab you in the back like I stabbed this turkey.
Like, fantastic. But yeah, this episode is, like, pretty much a wild ride from the beginning to the end. The amount of stuff that happens is insane. Like, when you really think about it, like, I was going through it and it was like, wait, this happens today, like, this episode too, like, what? Because we get not only the destruction of the Burke and Christina secret, but also pretty much, like, the destruction of the relationship we kind of see at the end. We get some really dark George, who is just, like, on a rampage this episode of, like, destroying everybody, including him taking some pretty deep cuts at his best friend.
I know, that one hurt. It hurt.
Yeah. The other really interesting part of this episode is that it's narrated by Christina, which I love that choice for this episode, and it's kind of one of the first ones in a while that we have had narrated by someone else. The last one, I think, was George.
219.
Yeah. But then we also get some really great parts of this episode. Like, we get the return of Alex Addison working together, mm-hmm. and who couldn't love Callie trying to beat up Meredith in the locker room?
That scene, when we get there.
Just you wait.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And I want to patent or TM or trademark, you know, whatever, but the hashtag Dark George, I think that we need to hashtag that one.
Oh, my God. Yeah. He's on, like, a rampage this episode.
I know.
Like, he's been on a rampage for, like, last episode, too, but this one he was just, like, people were like, oh, hey, George, and he was like, go away. And you're like, oh, my God.
George mad. Yeah.
Hulk smash.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to go bench a car.
Pretty much.
So, yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I just want to add every single member of Magic, like the original five interns, this season goes through a dark saga. That's what I'm going to call it. This mm-hmm. season, and, I mean, it started with, like, the dark Izzy saga. Then we moved to, mm-hmm. now we're, like, into the dark Christina saga, which, like, ends this episode. And we're moving quickly onto the hashtag Dark George saga, and it's a trend that will continue through the whole season. I mean, I love this, though. Like, I never would want George to permanently be like this, but watching TR and watching George go through this is, like, probably one of the biggest highlights of this season.
Mm-hmm.
Because you take this character that, like, has been kind of brushed aside as, like, not having a backbone and just kind of, like, in season two, he was almost used, at least for the first half, as, like, comic relief. And then you give him the spotlight and he does wonders with it. So it's great. I also love this idea, moving slightly over to, like, Christina and Burke, how the average day is the cause of destruction for them. Like, I like how it's not, like, a crazy circumstance, but it's the average day that destroyed their secret. And we'll talk way more about that later.
I was about to say, or, like, Burke says, like, procedures that he's done, like, 100 times or something, you know? Like, it's not, like...
And that's the point.
We're replacing a heart or something, like, something insane.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Replacing a heart.
You know that's just a heart transplant, right?
I don't know why heart transplant didn't, like, come to my mind instead.
Push Bikini Bottom somewhere else.
No.
All right, take it away.
Stop. All right. As doctors, we know everybody's secrets. Their medical histories, sexual histories, confidential information that is as essential to a surgeon as a 10 blade, and every bit as dangerous. We keep secrets. We have to. But not all secrets can be kept. Which is interesting because we've had this kind of, like, secrets come out theme for a while. Like, it's kind of like that thing that kind of keeps coming back.
What you'll notice is that season three very much mirrors certain themes and even lines, motifs that season two does. But so this is season three, episode 9. In season one, episode 9, it was all about secrets as well. It's something that Grey's Anatomy does a lot. It's like it constantly circles back to itself. Yeah, so we start in media res, which is a narrative device that Grey's Anatomy doesn't really use that often. Like, they used it in The Bomb. I really don't know if they've used it in any episode since then. So when you see this, it's almost always an indicator that shit is about to go down.
Yeah, well, and especially when that moment is Christina walking down a hallway just covered in blood. You know, which, shit's gonna go down.
Yeah, and honestly, like, this was just inevitable with these interns. Like, we were gonna get a scene eventually of one of them just running down a hallway covered in blood. My money would have been on Meredith, but, you know...
No, she ran down a hallway covered in, like, stomach contents or whatever. Remember?
Yeah. That was so funny. I thought you were about to bring up the fact that she was in the hallway when chunks of Dylan...
No, that would have been a good one, too.
She ran down a hallway covered in Dylan chunks.
Mmm.
Yummy. So, yeah, we get this shot of Sandra Oh running down a hallway in the hospital, covered in blood, mixed with this, like interlaced with this pretty intimate, like, sex scene between Christina and Burke, which, because this is on ABC, they're fully clothed, but we get the idea that they're probably having sex through their clothes.
It's the lead.
And... the lead up. Do you want to read this for us?
Sure. I was going to say one thing though. I don't think we mentioned this enough, cuz obviously we're always praising, like, Katherine Heigl. But Sandra Oh does an amazing acting job in this episode.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I honestly don't think she gets enough credit, although she did get an Emmy nomination in season 1, so that was good.
Which, fair, but I don't know. As a podcast, I feel like we give a lot of love to Katherine Heigl, which she deserves. But in this episode, I've got to give it out to Sandra Oh.
Giving out awards, Becca?
I am.
The Becca Award. This episode.
That literally means nothing.
All right. Let's do it. It
means nothing.
Why don't you give it out every episode? The Becca Award this episode goes to Christina. But yes, I agree with you. I feel like... This podcast is very pro-Izzy and pro-Katherine Heigl, which is a stance that we will never stray from. But that's not to say that we're not also pro-Sandra Oh.
Everyone else.
Ellen Pompeo. Not everyone else. But
most
yes,
of them.
Most of
I
them.
I will say, going off of this, I think almost every single actor does a really great job in this episode. Like, the emotions oh, yeah. and, like, what they're able to convey in this episode is, like, they did great. I don't know if this was, like,
yeah.
and, payday or and it something, seems but like, they were all pulling out everything.
It seems like they finally, like, they've gotten to the point in their TV show where they really know their characters. Mm-hmm. And they can play it almost on instinct.
Yeah. Which is great. Anyway, so we have a quote from the Grey Matter blog, which I gave it a little bit of a shout out next episode, like last episode, but I'm going to give it another shout out. Read this Grey Matter blog because Kip Koenig did a great job.
Yes.
But it says, "I'm scared because people like their Grey's Anatomy to be Grey's Anatomy. And this episode is, well, different than the tried and true. There's Christina's voiceover, for starters. We've only had one other episode narrated by someone other than Meredith, and that was George. And that was almost, this is me, I was like, that was almost more of, like, after, like, kind of arguably, like, a comical, like, circumstance. Like, it was him dealing with Meredith, which, like, arguably was kind of
LOL. Comical.
I thought it was kind of funny. But I'm a jerk like
on this
that,
podcast, so. It was comedy. No, but what really, like, the reason I included that is that it struck me as, like, see, when you watch something as a little kid like I did, or, like, it's so old that you're not, like, episode to episode, you're not, like, experiencing it as a viewer, you're just kind of, like, binging it. It didn't really strike me that this episode was taking a huge risk. And apparently it was. Because apparently, like, the writers were afraid that people were not going to accept this episode.
But they did a great job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So then we cut to, like, basically the old married couple who are doing a crossword puzzle, and Derek is making jokes about knitting, which, for the record, Derek, she already did that.
Also, Meredith is eating Super Bran, and you know that Derek is betrayed by that. That's the biggest motif of betrayal in this episode, is that she's not eating muesli. She's like, Derek, muesli gives me the slams. He's like, that's the point. It really also, clears you out.
I've never heard of that word.
I guess they're smart.
Is that just my uneducated brain? Not even uneducated. I went to college. I graduated from college.
Anyway, so congratulations. So Christina interrupts and she goes, am I interrupting sex? And Derek's like, no, good, get out. What? You can't ask me to leave. And then Christina's like, no, but Meredith can.
No, Christina's like, no, actually, I can get you to leave, Meredith. And Meredith's like, yep, bye. Get out.
Honestly, this is one of the cutest Meredith and Derek moments. And, you know, settle in, folks, because this is about to be a 3-hour podcast. But I realized that we kind of sold ourselves short last episode. Meredith and Derek are back together. Like, this is amazing. This is uncharted waters. We have been wanting this since they broke up in basically 201. Well, basically. And it's like, as a writer of these very early episodes of when they just got back together, you have a tremendous amount of weight on your shoulders to live up to this fantasy that the fans have had in their head for so long. And what do you think? Do you think that they did a good job?
I love it.
I think that they did. I think that they, this is a minor spoiler, but they only have a couple episodes where they're blissfully happy together. And I think that in those couple episodes, they reestablished what the fans want. So, like, they gave the fans these amazing scenes. Ellen and Patrick have so much chemistry in these scenes. They're so blissfully happy. You fall in love with it off the bat. And then when they take it away from you in later season 3, that becomes the new gold standard. And that's mm-hmm. what you want again. So, wonderful job. They had to stick that landing, and they stuck it.
Christina, I just love this. I jogged here. You don't jog. And let's just, like, remember the last time that they jogged together was when Christina was pregnant.
And then collapsed and lost her baby. And then Meredith blamed herself.
Well, I was going to say, like, let's remember, like, their mental states the last time they jogged. Like, Christina was, like, pregnant with Burke's baby, and they weren't even together. And Meredith was still going over because she had just figured out about Addison. And so they went for a jog. And so this whole like inference of like Christina jogging is you're like, oh my God.
That was the line that I love so much. Now, every time I see a freaking ferry boat, I love that line. Anyway, so Christina is just like not paying attention to Meredith. And she out of the blue just asks, what if Derek robbed a bank? Do you want to do this? Actually, sure. You'd be Meredith.
What?
Say Derek was robbing a bank, and while he was in there, you were waiting outside, because it was your job to drive the getaway car.
Why would Derek rob a bank?
Just go with me here.
Okay, Derek's robbing a bank.
And he gets caught, and no one knows that you were involved, because you were driving the car.
Okay, Derek's in jail, I'm in the mystery car. What's the question?
Would you turn yourself in? Or would you stay quiet and let Derek go down for a robbery in which you were a complicit participant? Or would you stand by him?
Well, whose idea was it to rob the bank?
I don't know. His. But you helped. I mean, could you live with yourself if you walked away and let the man you love take the fall?
If you tell me, maybe I can help. And then they...
I like that line, though, when Meredith goes, if you tell me, maybe I can help. And then there's like a long pause where Christina won't meet Meredith's eye. And then she goes, if you tell me. And that I wanted to include that because that kind of comes full circle at the end of the episode. But like, there's so much to unpack here. This bank robbery, like motif, will continue throughout the rest of the season. So I'll continue to bring it up. And I really love how right off the bat, you get the idea that this is not going to be your average Grey's Anatomy episode. I mean, obviously from that creepy, bloody hallway scene, but, like, things are already weird. Like, Christina never jogs, but she's jogging, you know? It's just, like, a really brilliant, subtle way for the writers to show and not just tell you.
It also kind of gives me vibes of Before the Bomb episode when Meredith is like, I think I'm going to die today. Like, I mean, they're in the same room, that kind of,
same, you know, characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're totally right. I also found it interesting that Meredith asks, whose idea is it to rob the bank? And she says it's Burke's. When, if you go back to the episode, it was kind of Christina's. I mean, it was both of them, but like, when she goes, well, what if I held the blah, blah, blah? You know? It, like, Christina kind of was pushing it along, but in her mind, it was Burke's idea, which is kind of her downfall.
Yeah, well, and I think in her mind, it was like, because she was like, well, what if I held this? Like, trying to help him? And so I wonder if that's, like, in her mind being, like, it was his idea or something. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of, there's a lot of vibes in this episode of like, whose fault is it, you know? Is it Christina's? Is it Burke's? Is it someone outside of the two of them, you know? Did like, like, was, you know, Derek being distracted when he's checking Burke? Like, all of these different things, like even George figuring that out and not telling anybody, like, whose fault is this? And you kind of, at the end of the episode, I mean, there's never a clear answer, because it's kind of everyone's, you know? It's like, each person was kind of like a casual bystander who like knew about it and who didn't say anything or like didn't do anything or didn't do the right thing. But it's kind of interesting. It like brings up that whole thing of like, I mean, if you really look at it, like, who is at fault, Christina or Burke?
And in classic Grey's Anatomy fashion, the message is no one's at fault. Everyone's at fault. And it doesn't matter who's at fault.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah, it's like all that matters is that it happened in life.
Exactly. Yeah. But I do like this part too, where Christina begins to leave and Meredith says, Christina, you don't jog. We don't jog. And then she goes, I jog sometimes without you. And that, in a way, kind of also falls into the betrayal theme, because Meredith sees her and Christina as a unit. Like, we don't jog. But Christina's like, I can have a life without you.
Also, I would just like to bring a moment to this. Christina is jogging in so many clothes.
I know. There's no way it's that cold.
She has a scarf on. Who runs in a scarf.
No, this is the writers pretending that they know what joggers wear. As two joggers, no, ladies and gentlemen, no.
Although maybe it's supposed to be like, she doesn't jog, and so she's like randomly like just throwing on clothes because she doesn't run, mm-hmm. and so she was just like, yeah, this works.
You know what, let me grab my timeline real quick, hang on. According to my timeline, it's June.
Yeah, it's hot. It's way too many clothes.
It's June. Time is a flat circle in Seattle. So then, wow, we made it past the first scene. Good. Go us. So Christina goes downstairs into the intern OTP house and meets George. And George is...
Dark George.
Yeah, Dark George. And George is just not having it. And
his face.
Yeah, his face is like, fuck you. And
get out
and,
of my house.
And there is a poster... Okay, so Meredith's house has all of a sudden become so overly decorated. Like, there's stuff everywhere, and it took until this episode for me to realize it. But there's this poster in the background that just says, bad dates. And it has, like, just,
these
like...
really awkward feet.
These really awkward feet and legs. And it reminded me of our bad dads, which was Thatcher and the Chief. Bad dads.
And Mia's dad, but it's yeah, a whole whatever. Other story.
Anyway...
Their decor totally reads like Izzy just like had a bad day or something and like went by the thrift shop and was like, we need these decorations for our house, and
she's like, I'm gonna pop some tags.
I can sometimes go a little overboard, because there's another and just a couple, we'll get there.
Yeah.
But there's more.
This decor just screams, I can sometimes go a little overboard. And this, I love this moment, this Izzy moment when she goes, hey, so are you and Meredith having one of your, we're best friends, we're so cool, secret time things? Sorry, I'm cranky. Candy stripey makes me cranky. And she steals George's coffee, which is important. Then Derek's like, oh, so I can have my girlfriend back. And okay, let me just pause. Let me ask you this. When... Derek says the word girlfriend. Did that, like, strike you in kind of a weird way?
Not really.
Because the first time I heard it, like, way back when I watched this for the first time, I was kind of like, yeah, I guess she is his girlfriend. But it just seems like such a casual label for their, like, fire-burning, once-in-a-lifetime faded romance. You know what I mean? It's just like,
for
I guess...
everything they've been through.
Yeah, exactly, for everything they've been through. And then Izzy kicks George's newspaper, and she's like, what's wrong with her? I want a best friend like Izzy. Like, sorry, Becca, but I want a best friend like Lizzie. Not Izzy. Lizzie. Damn it, Izzy.
You have a Lizzie.
I do have a Lizzie, and I wouldn't trade her in for the world. And then George doesn't answer.
Izzy sits down next to this, like, massive, like... I guess, what did we figure out this is? Like, an Asian hat that they use,
Asian
like, in farming?
Conical hat for rice farming.
Conical.
And conical, right. And I'm just blown away by it. Like,
because first off, it's massive.
It's also at the bottom of a bench. So if somebody sat down on that bench, like, the hat could, like, sever their spine.
I don't think it's that point. And then there's, like, this weird, like... fabric
whip.
Hangy thing.
Oh, is that what that is? Okay.
I have no idea.
Yeah, Izzy's like, we're cultured now. Anyway, so Katherine Heigl gets to do another massive eye roll. She looks amazing. Anyway, now we're...
Another color that works for Izzy is purple.
So now we're finally in the hospital with Burke and Christina. And the gist of this is that Burke actually thinks his tremor is pretty much fixed. Because he hasn't had a tremor in over a week. And Christina is just freaking out because George knows. Burke actually says the line, Christina, you're too intense. That's like her version of, I can sometimes go a little overboard.
Oh my god.
And I think throughout this whole episode, we get the sense that this... I think... part of the point that we're supposed to get is that Christina's an intern, and despite the fact that she's very talented and capable, she's still an intern.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because Burke is not freaking out about this, and Christina is. And I don't think it's because Burke isn't a logical man. Obviously, we know he is. I think that this is too much for an intern.
Mm-hmm. It also interests me that, like, he isn't the one that's, like, freaking out about this. Like, it's kind of, like, the one that we always see as, like, the robot and all this stuff. And she's the one that, like, completely breaking down over this, which is super interesting to me. Because I almost kind of thought that, like, I don't know, when this whole thing came up, and I feel like it happened in Grey's Anatomy, so as soon as they started pretending, you were like, we knew this was going to go down mm-hmm. badly. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think my thoughts were that it was going to be Burke that was going to break. And it was going to be because his, like, logical mind was just like, I can't do this anymore. Like, this is lying. Or, like, you know, like, it was just going to be his, like...
Or his moral.
Yeah, not his, like, logical. More of his, like, yeah, that was the word. Like, moral compass.
Yeah.
That it was going to be him. And so I think it's so interesting that they went with the facts of, like you said, they kind of went with the, like, naive kind of, likeness of Christina and, like...
And I think that was a good choice. Mm-hmm. Because it was also the unexpected choice.
But it's also, like, if we've noticed, it really is her the one that's taking a lot of the stress about this, because she's the one that has Bailey down her back about mm-hmm. all of this. She's the one that has George down her back all about this. She's the one that's been, I mean, pretty much constantly reading and trying to figure out his surgeries and stressing out about this. And so it makes sense. Like, it mm-hmm. isn't something that they just kind of, like, pulled out of thin air and were like, we're going to twist it. So Christina's the one that freaks out. But, like, when she does freak out, you're like, yeah, no, it totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like Burke would have been freaking out more if he actually, like, I think he thinks he's in the clear. I really do.
And, like, arguably, I think his tremor is getting better. And so I think he's like, oh, we're great now. And it's like, yeah, okay, it's good that it's better. But, like,
anyway, yeah, we'll get more into it with more scenes. But, yeah, that just sets it up. So there's a trauma. A car ran into a fish market. And...
As Bailey says, it plowed through the fish market, which I just like that line.
Yeah, I love how Grey's Anatomy every once in a while just throws in, like, over descriptive words where you're like, why in God's, like, it's almost comical sometimes where you're just like, nice, respect. And so all hands on deck. I mean, we have Derek, we have all the interns, we have Callie, we have Burke, so
even Addison shows up a little bit.
Hell yeah, she does, baby.
We love Addison.
Mrs. Dickerson, is her role this episode is to be in everyone's way constantly and to say that
becomes Derek in this episode.
Exactly. So the car has a mind of its own, apparently. It's like so obvious that she's lying that it's not even funny.
I don't know, it gets like really annoying. Like, I'm like, granted, I'm not married, and I'm not, like, an older person, like, married to, like, someone who, like, you know, I haven't been through the same thing she has, but, like, she's just like, it was the car, and I'm like, oh, God, shut up.
Well, no.
Just say it was your husband.
What it's coming off as is that, like, the first thing she thinks to say is, oh, it was the car. It's just like, well, you're obviously lying. Like, you're obviously trying to get ahead of this. Just, like, get
clearly
out of my way.
Your husband wanted to murder hundreds of people. God. I also just like, because she's like, it was the car. And then she's just like, even though he dropped me off and I wasn't there. And they're like, then how do you know? Maybe he is a murderous, hurt human being that just wanted to murder people.
Yeah.
You don't know, lady.
You don't know. God. You don't know your own husband. How dare you?
He could be a serial killer. God damn it.
Exactly. So now that we've finished beating up on this little old lady, so Erica Hahn is introduced in this scene. And I just like... I don't even understand, like, I got so much pleasure out of this, where she goes, Preston Burke, back from the dead, can't say the same for your patient, and I was just like, what? What a totally necessary and absolutely scathing burn by Erica Hahn. Like, why? Like...
She brings so much pleasure.
Can't say the same for your patient.
In this episode, because her, like, sole purpose in life, her whole sole purpose as a character is just to, like, basically, like, annoy Burke to death, and she does such a fantastic job. And like, I don't, who plays Erica? I can't remember the actress's
something
name.
Brooke,
but she just does like such a good job of like playing that kind of like cocky like bitchiness, you know, like
although if can't you say the same Brooke for your Smith patient. Yeah, I love that though. She's like, can't say the same for your patient. It's like,
you know,
wow.
Like, just how she delivers some of those lines, you're like, ugh, yes.
But, like, I was just like, why was that even, like, included? I don't know. It's just so funny to me.
It's enjoyable. I loved it.
Do you actually... Now, this is a conversation for far later, but just yes or no, right off the bat. Do you actually like Erica Hahn as a character? Not with what we know about her so far, but the whole character.
Not really.
Okay, good. We're on the same page. All right, continuing. Addison sees this lady that
I love this lady.
I love this lady that somehow walked in to a very like tight ER covered in blood and
like didn't get stopped by anyone.
No, there I rewatched it 3 times. People are like literally moving out of the way to get around her. Nobody at this hospital will help this lady who is covered in glass and blood.
Except Addison.
And Addison, who is across the room, is, like, body-checking people to get to this lady.
And then this woman delivers the line.
The line of the episode.
The line of the season. Honestly, this line is fantastic. I think I might be parked in a red zone. And then just, like, falls over.
And I died. That is... I will not say it's the line of the season, but it's certainly the line of this episode. I think I might be parked in a red zone. And then she just, like, collapses. It is not funny, and it is hilarious all at once. Amazing. I love this show. I love this show
it
so much.
It also just, like, brings up memories of, like... Derek's awful parking jobs in season 1, and you're like, don't worry, honey, Derek hasn't been towed yet, you'll be fine.
It's so amazing. She just, like, I have this screenshot of her, and she's just, like, staring off into space, and then she's like, I think I might be parked in a red zone. I love it. Anyway.
Janelle is such, like, a strange, but, like, hilarious character, because she's kind of, like, spacey in some ways.
Oh, yeah. She's a space cadet.
But, like, also just very, like, honest. Like, I feel like she'd just, like, look at someone and be like, you're ugly. And then, like, be like, okay.
And then, like collapse, yeah.
You, like, I don't know.
So yeah. Then we have a commercial, the Grey's Anatomy title card. And then we come back and Janelle...
To another classic episode.
Another Janelle scene, which can't get enough of those. She goes, I flew.
I'm sorry. I flew through a window. I flew.
What is wrong with us that we think that that's so funny? She goes, I flew through a window. I flew. So funny. Oh, I love it. And then Mrs. Dickerson climbs into this scene like Gollum. And she goes, Janelle, honey, can I get you anything? Maybe some food? Does it look like she needs food right now?
She's literally covered
she
in
She just
blood.
Flew through a window. Okay.
And Janelle, Mrs. Dickerson, is that you? No, it's her ghost.
It's your conscious. Then she, just scrolling down later, she goes, the doctors, hot men. They're all really hot. They are, aren't they? It's not just because I'm wearing a plate glass window. Like, holy shit, this lady. And then Addison just goes, nope, they're man candy. Which is actually kind of like looking back on what we know in the next couple of episodes. It's kind of funny that it's Mark and Alex that she's talking about. Yeah. Ugh, and then
she, like, coughs up blood, and she's like, okay, that's nasty.
I love her. She's, like, the dream patient. Like, she's the patient that you want. She's amazing.
She's fantastic.
I think it might be parked in a red zone. Oh, my Lord.
And then we get this amazing scene.
Amazing.
Izzy meeting the O'Malleys.
I literally would follow these three characters into a 6 movie series. Like, I'm good. I want to live in this scene forever because yes. I love their interactions.
I feel like that's excessive, but okay.
I can sometimes go a little overboard.
Just look, it's so cute. And Izzy looks so happy to meet them, and they're, like, so happy to meet them.
I know. It's so adorable. I love it.
Mrs. O'Malley just, like, creepishly, like, is like, so nothing sexual is going on with you and Georgie? And it's like, ugh.
And Izzy's like, no, nothing sexual. So where are the other O'Malley men today? The Myth Brothers.
Stop. Izzy's like, please, God, can we talk about anything else?
Yeah. And like the, this whole scene happens, you know, like they're saying whatever, it's hinting at the fact that George is the one that brought Dr. Han, yada yada. But then it ends with this. Should we do the dialogue or should I just...
You do it.
Okay, it ends with Mrs. O'Malley, like, Izzy's just, like, watching George go with this, like, worried face. And then Mrs. O'Malley just, like, creeps into the frame, which is hilarious. And she goes, "You're pretty. There's nothing sexual between you and Georgie, even just a little." And then Mr. O'Malley's like, "Louise, what? I just want Georgie to be happy." And then Izzy, like, with these, like, horrified eyes, she just goes, "Okay, let's just prep you for surgery."
Izzy's like, "Get me out of this room."
That's got to be one of the best delivered lines by Katherine Heigl in this show. So funny. Although I will say, and look, this is not a spoiler-free podcast. We try not to spoil, but like, I think it makes for a better podcast if we do point out some things that may spoil it for you. So if you're afraid of all spoilers, I would skip ahead a little bit. But this whole scene is not here by mistake. This whole scene is here for a very intentional reason. And this is the show getting an idea in your head so that when it does slash if it does ever happen, at the very least, it's not something you haven't thought about. You've already thought about it because the show forced you to. And it's a very common tactic. You see it in movies, TV shows, books. If you look around, you will see this everywhere. Because just by making an audience think about something, even if it's presented as a joke, actually makes you more likely to respond positively to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. So we cut back to Dr. Han, who is a very interesting character for me, because slight spoiler, but we're going to see her again and a lot more, you know, but she's like this interesting character because I feel like they clearly almost made her, like when they brought up the character of Erica Han, I don't think they had the intention that she was going to be in as many episodes as she ends up being in. And so they made her, I think, almost purposefully kind of one-dimensional, because her sole purpose, like if we look back to all the Denny stuff, her sole purpose was to be like the thing, like the obstacle in Burke's way.
Well, could we even say that she might be a foil to Burke, or is that even
is that a little bit, but
is she though? Because like, I think, is she an obstacle, like, or is she a foil?
I think it's more of like an obstacle, like because she just kind of like gets in his way and he's just like, "Go away," you know, like,
you know, but what she reminds me of is, like, those really early portrayals, like, way back in, like, the 70s and 80s. Like, the really early portrayals of how they tried to make a quote-unquote strong, independent woman, you know? And how they used to do it is just make this, like, woman that was, like, a cold-hearted, as much of a man, have as many manly traits as possible, but also be, like, no emotion. So, like, unfeeling, bitchy. I mean, she is the master of bitchcraft in this episode. No friends, nothing makes her vulnerable. She's just like, not like barely human. And that's how they're like, "Look at this strong, independent woman." But now it seems beneath Grey's Anatomy, as this is 2006, right?
Well, I think that's part of the problem with like how they like introduced her character. Because again, the sole purpose of her character was to be that kind of like, like almost like pain in like Burke's side. And then it was like almost like they kind of set that up, and then it was like, "Oh no, she's actually going to be a bigger character than we originally thought." And then they almost like tried to kind of set her up as something different, but it's like, it's hard when you are steering in one direction and have kind of made this character purposefully almost like one-dimensional and kind of like whatever, and then you're like, "Oh no, but she's got these things," and you're like, it feels weird. And so I don't know if that's again like partly because they didn't know where they were going with the character when they introduced her or what.
Yeah,
but you can definitely tell, and we can talk about it more when that comes. But
well, and you're partly right, yeah, but I think it's also that Grey's Anatomy is like almost known for creating these like crazy, complex, amazing, unique characters that subvert those one-dimensional representations at every turn. Like I said in one of the first times we podcasted about this show, Grey's Anatomy makes you stereotype and then pulls the rug out from under you on purpose. But with Han, it's almost like what you see is what you get, and you're like, there's no depth, you know? For anyone who missed season 2, Erica Han delivers this line. Last time I saw you, you stole my patient's heart and then got shot. Karma rocks. Another scathing burn.
Thank you for that, Han.
Yeah, and I honestly do appreciate, though, that the show wastes no time showing us that Han is here for George, because I think they were right to assume that drama and mystery around that wouldn't really mean anything. So, good job.
Well, and what's more interesting is seeing the, like, Christina unravel about it.
Yeah, because she's our main character.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we get another, like, the chief scene with Han, and Han delivers this line, "Well, I'm always ready to lend a hand, Dr. Weber." And depending on when certain things happened, this is either a very obvious and smart line to throw in, or a brilliant line, a brilliant just-in-case line to throw in. And I can't say anything else without spoiling a major plot point, so keep that in mind.
But we'll bring this up later.
Oh, definitely.
So then we have, like, this really more kind of dark George, but more of, like, just George being, like, a normal kind of human being. I mean, he makes a little stab that's, like, a little bit low, but, like, Callie's, like, all trying to be, like, "Oh, I'm asking about your dad." And he's, like, "We broke up." Like,
yeah, and he says, like, "Why? Why do you care?" And Callie's, like, "Because I care about you." And he goes, "Right, I guess that's why you slept with Mark Sloan. Makes sense." I'm like,
granted, that may have been a little bit too much of, like, a cut, but I'm like, he makes a good point.
Yeah, it's like, fucking exactly, Callie. It reminds me a tiny bit of Derek when he chooses Addison, and then he's like, "What, Meredith and I can't be friends?" It's like, you broke up with me. You don't get to pick and choose what parts of me you want.
Yeah, well, and it's funny because wasn't it, like, 2 episodes ago or something that, like, George is, like, trying to talk to Callie, and she says, like, the same thing. She's like, "We broke up." Like, she makes, like, the exact same point to him.
Was that the Bucket of Chicken episode?
I don't remember. I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe that was 3 episodes ago. Whatever.
Yeah. It's just like, Callie, make up your damn mind. Ugh. And we're saved by a glorious Addison and Janelle scene. So this whole Janelle having a baby and not telling the father about the baby, this is actually very fascinating to me, because this is included to foreshadow something that will happen in season 3, episode 11 and 12. So not even next episode, not this episode, not next episode, but in 11 and 12, which is, it's not that I don't understand it. It's just kind of like something that we haven't seen. So it's just kind of cool.
It's interesting. And we get this moment where Callie comes in to challenge basically Meredith to a duel. Mm-hmm. And Meredith is like, "Good God, Callie, can you go away?"
No, it's not even that. Like, she's not even annoyed. She just, like, doesn't even care. Like, Meredith doesn't care to the point where she should win a medal for it.
It's funny. She's just like, "I'm setting up a chest tube." And Callie's like, "I need to talk to you." And Meredith is like, "I'm busy."
Meredith's like, "Oh, I'm doing my job. Maybe you should do yours."
For once, really. Yeah. Like, let's be honest.
Also, I just wanted to mention that heart of glass is an actual common idiom. And Janelle has a piece of glass in her heart. And I didn't know. I just wanted to bring that up because there might be something there. Should I go down that rabbit hole? Probably not. So I'll just leave it at that.
And then we just have to mention this for this line. Meredith is out looking for Callie, and she finds Derek, and then she says this, "You know, there's a girl who literally has a shard of glass in her chest."
There's a girl who literally has a shard of glass in her chest.
Which, thank you, Meredith, for that.
Yeah, I know. And then we get this hysterical scene where Burke comes into the x-ray viewing area that Meredith and Derek are.
I think it's CT.
And he... yeah, the CT viewing. And Derek goes, "What's wrong with Christina?" And Meredith gives him a face that is essential, that, like, essentially is the killing curse. Like, she is shooting lightning out of her eyes at Derek. Oh my God, yes. It is hysterical. And Burke is like, what do you mean? What do you mean? And Derek says, first she kicks me out of bed at 5 this morning so she can have girl talk. Ugh, so fucking condescending. With Meredith. And now I can't find her. She's supposed to be my intern. I had to get my own CT. What's going on?
I actually had to do work in this hospital. It's outrageous.
Patrick Dempsey delivering that line was one of my favorite things that happened this episode. What's going on? The way he said that was so funny. And I just love Christina's, like, disdain for his authority. Like, literally, she just didn't show up. Like, I can't find her.
Which is fantastic.
Derek's like, has anyone seen my intern? So funny.
And Meredith is like trying to cover nothing. Christina's fine. She's just working really hard.
She's just like, if you don't shut up, I'm gonna knife you and then poop in the holes.
And Burke's like, I haven't noticed anything wrong. I have no idea.
I haven't noticed any social cues.
And then he leaves and Meredith's like, oh my god, don't, you can't mention Christina to Burke. Okay, it's not a good idea. Like, what are you doing? And Derek's like, what?
Like I said, I have a theory that Derek would have absolutely no idea what's going on 100% of the time unless he was dating Meredith.
It's so true. Well, and now he actually, like, lives in the house where, like, arguably most things go down. And so he's actually kind of, like, kind of involved in it. And so he's like, all these things are happening. When you're like, good God, just go back to your shit trailer.
Do you think it's kind of weird? Like, I know we're in season 3 now. Like, we've established that, like, Meredith and Derek are OTP. And Meredith would, you know, drown you if you suggested that Derek is not the most amazing man ever. But do you think it's kind of weird for George and Izzy to live in the house with their boss?
Yes.
Do you think it's kind of weird?
Yes.
Like, I don't know. Like, if I was, and it's not even, but like, no, your direct any boss. It's like your no boss's has boss.
No one has any respect for Derek, though, so they probably don't care.
I know. That's so true.
They're like, whatever. If it was, like, Burke or someone, they'd probably be like, oh, this is weird. But, like, it's Derek, so nobody cares.
What's going on? Anyway, so I need that soundbite. So Derek asked Meredith what they talked about in bed this morning, and Meredith just goes, bank robberies, which isn't really the point. It's like, of course it's not.
And you're like, yep, Christina's robbing a bank. Thank you, Meredith.
Yeah, that's where she is. Not that I should interfere, but you're going to anyway. That is literally the definition of Meredith. I'm just going to ask once, very nicely, please, please. And now she's just like using her, you know, seductive powers.
Adorableness.
And it's adorable. Honestly, they smile at each other and my face catches on fire. I love how Grey's Anatomy and Patrick and Ellen turn that from like a really like intense scene to the most adorable thing ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I swoon.
Yeah. So then we like figure out where Christina is, and she's basically just standing watching George's dad like a creeper.
She's standing doing nothing. She's just watching. So funny.
Uh-huh. And we get basically the chief confirms for all of us who were confused, thank you, that George's dad is electing to have Dr. Han perform his bowel replacement.
Yeah.
Which, fantastic. Thank you.
And then we have this, like, super dramatic line that we realized after the commercial was only there so you would watch the commercials and come back, which is, Dr. Burke has been replaced. Yeah. But here's my question. What exactly is Christina so worried about here? Like, is she mostly worried that the secret will get out and Burke will be in trouble, that she'll be in trouble, that, like, Han will replace Burke permanently and then she won't have privileges on his surgeries, that he won't need her? Like, I'm, like, kind of confused on, like, what is she freaking out so much about?
Mm-hmm. I think it's just, like, everything, you know? Like, I think that she's gotten to that point in her mind where it's just, like, she doesn't know almost, like, what's going to happen and, like, just everything. Like,
mm-hmm. Like, I think maybe she thinks that she's going to be in trouble with the chief.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, too, she's worried about, in some way, I think she's worried that, like, when this goes down, I think she knows that, like, her and Burke's relationship isn't going to be the same.
See, that's interesting. Yeah. And that her reputation might be destroyed as well.
I was about to say, like, the two most important things in her life are, like, her reputation and that kind of stuff. And I think Burke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then after the commercial, we get yet another, and we don't get many of these scenes in a regular episode, but in this episode, we get so many Burke and Christina one-on-one scenes. Mm-hmm. And Christina wants to line up their stories. And I really, this line just kind of popped out, stuck out to me from Burke, where he goes, "This is why I feel like I'm covering for you. I don't line up stories. That's not me." Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, I kind of respect mm-hmm. that.
But also, like,
he's a very honorable man.
Yeah, and that's, I feel like that's why the kind of like this whole thing is confusing for me, because like Burke has these morals and is like a very honorable man, but at the same time he's doing something that's like not on, like lying in a mm-hmm. certain sense, like to his patients and like to his boss. And so it really just like makes me interested of like what's going on in his mind, like almost like how he's explaining this to himself, you know, like to make it okay.
Yeah. Well, in the Grey Matter blog does touch on that a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be dramatic. You know me, I'm never dramatic. But Izzy and Mrs. O'Malley gossiping is probably the best thing that's ever happened to the world. And Mrs. O'Malley says, "Did Georgie and Dr. Burke have a falling out?" And Izzy's just like leaning over this like tray table. I love this. She's like, "I don't think so." "Then what's going on with George and Dr. Hahn?" Oh my god. "There's definitely nothing going on with George and Dr. Hahn." And the subtext here is that Erica Hahn would utterly obliterate him.
Oh my god, yes.
Like, he barely survived Meredith.
It's so true.
And Mr. O'Malley then says, "I already told you, Dr. Torres is the one who loves George." I love how they're picking up all of this gossip and they've been in the hospital for like 3 days. I love this. This hospital runs on gossip.
I know. Like, even the patients know. It's,
yeah. Dogs know. I love this.
"Well, how much did George tell you?" And Mrs. O'Malley's like, "Everything. I'm his mother." And so Izzy's like, "Okay."
Izzy now, like, yeah, she like gossip vomits all over the place.
And then I'm like, "Well, then, you know, Callie's a little bit out there."
Understatement of the year.
Well, and then this. "I mean, I've seen more of her body than I have my own." What the hell?
What Nobody needs to be naked that often. He didn't tell you that? Why would he tell them that, Izzy? I love Izzy.
"Hi, parents. My new girlfriend just peed in front of my friends."
And then didn't wash her hands.
Ooh.
But this is also interesting. Izzy goes, "I don't know why they broke up. I mean, he really seemed to like her. And I think he kind of needed her."
Well, I think it's, I don't know. For me, I noticed, like, when George had Callie, like, you know, I feel like that's when his confidence started soaring. And, like,
mm-hmm.
but even, like, in his, like, confidence in his, like, medical abilities. And so I feel like almost that way. But then also, if you really look at it, Callie's the one who kind of, like, helped him after Meredith. And I think that's what she's alluding to, because her next line is, "I mean, you remember the whole George and Meredith thing." And so I think that's, like, what she's saying is, like, I think George needed Callie to get over Meredith and, like, to move on and, like...
Well, and that's kind of, like, it was a very quick line that you can miss if you blink, but, like, that's kind of Izzy being a bigger person and being like, mm-hmm. "I don't know why they broke up. He seemed to like her, you know?" Whereas, like, in season two, she was very jealous of the fact that George didn't need Izzy, yeah. you know? So.
Arguably hates Callie. And then she like, completely drops the bomb on George and Meredith, which, like, they did not know. And Miss O'Malley, "I knew it."
What? No, you didn't.
Has she met Meredith? Izzy, "George didn't tell you that either."
I just love Mrs. O'Malley when she goes, "He isn't a stud, he's just very handsome."
O'Malley, men are studs.
People but focus, George is not dating Erica Hahn.
I like how Izzy has like an agenda, you know? Like,
yes, yes.
She's gossiping with an agenda. People focus, we have real things to discuss here. Mm-hmm.
She's just like, "You're getting off topic." And then I love this shot of, like, blurry Mr. O'Malley in the background and then Izzy and Mrs. O'Malley in the foreground staring at each other and smiling. It's just a gorgeous shot. I love all these characters. It's just, like, one of those scenes that you just can't help but smiling at the end.
Well, I just love it. "Do me a favor. Could you find out?" And Izzy's like, "On it."
Like, honestly, I could sit... I would be okay with, like, Izzy going over to their house every year for Thanksgiving dinner. You know what I mean? Like, I could see it. It just... They portray that very well. And it's interesting that they chose to show that Izzy particularly gets along well with the O'Malleys.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to this scene.
Settle in.
Which I know, as soon as you guys all saw this in the episode, you had to have thought that Becca and Emily are going to obsess over this scene. And you know what?
You're goddamn right we are. Callie comes into the locker room, which I'm so glad they said it in the locker room, and challenges Meredith Grey to a physical altercation.
Everything goes down in the locker room. That's when Meredith almost, like, ripped Alex to shreds in, like, season one, remember?
That was Izzy. Oh.
No.
Izzy did, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where all the shit goes.
You down. Smell like crap.
What a burn.
Oh. So, just, like... I'm going to say this sentence again. I want you to let this sink in. Callie challenges Meredith Grey to a physical altercation. And I truly believe that if Izzy did not sacrifice her body, Meredith would have ruined her.
And it's not because, like, if this was just a physical fight, Callie would rip Meredith to shreds.
So true.
But Meredith is a freaking demon. Literally. It would probably just be, like, staring at her and, like, just, like, lightning would come out of nowhere and, like, smite Callie or something. Like,
Meredith is a demon. Meredith is a hellion. Honestly.
Meredith has been doing weird things with her Ouija board at night. Who knows?
Aligning yourself as Meredith Grey's enemy in this show is like turning your back on a hurricane.
I also love how, like, through all of this, when, like, Callie's, like, in Meredith's face, like, yelling at her, Meredith does not look alarmed. Like, she's just like, okay.
She looks at most annoyed.
Yeah, like, she's like, ugh, why are we doing, why are we talking about this?
Ellen Pompeo.
This isn't about me, I don't care.
Ellen Pompeo seriously does God's work. Like, you need to, I'm sure you all watched this episode and watched this scene, but you need to go back and rewatch it and don't even look at any other character, just watch Ellen Pompeo. It is amazing.
I also just love Izzy, Callie, what you up to?
Yeah, I love that. Kicking Meredith's ass. And at this point, Callie is dancing around with a detonator. Like, any...
She's a little monster.
I'm not a betting woman, okay? But Izzy and Meredith versus Callie would not end well for Callie. And I don't think that you could, like, try to argue another point. Like, Izzy grew up in a trailer park. She could physically destroy her.
I was about to say, doubt. I feel like Izzy's scrappy.
Oh, she's
like,
scrappy. She's a biter. She's an eye gouger.
She's a biter.
I mean, she is.
I just, like, imagine, like, someone coming into this locker room and, like, Izzy and Callie are, like, wrestling, like, on the floor. Like, Izzy's, like, trying to, like, bite Callie or something, and Meredith's just, like, sitting calmly on a bench, like, yep.
Exactly. Meredith's on her BlackBerry.
It's, like, George that walks in and it's just like, what the hell? And Meredith's like, oh, hey, I'm filing my nails. Like, something like, you know.
And Meredith burns down people's lives just to rule over the ashes. So, I mean, Godspeed, Callie. Anyway, so Callie goes, I kept your secrets. I was discreet. I was a really good friend when I didn't have to be. And now you do this? And Meredith's like, do what? And Izzy the whole time, use your words. Use your words, Callie.
I love Izzy.
Izzy is amazing in this scene.
She reminds me of, like, a kindergarten teacher. Okay, honey, use your words. What do we want to say to your friend? So funny.
And then Callie goes, panties, Meredith. I'm talking about the McFrickin' code of silence in that pair of panties I pulled off the bulletin board. Not to mention the adulterous McSex I witnessed. Remember that?
I'm sorry. The panties you pulled off the bulletin board that nobody believed were yours.
That nobody believed for one split second
because
would
they
fit
were
you.
Size child's small.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry that you barging in on us having sex was an inconvenience to you. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, sorry. Sorry we inconvenienced you while you barged in on a private moment.
And then I just love Izzy. I'm sorry, but she's very little and you're hurting her.
It is so... The way that line is delivered is adorable. I'm sorry, but she's very little and you're hurting her. I was like, oh my God, that's so cute. That's got to make my list of best intern moments. It's got to.
I love you. And then I like this. You told George, my night with McStevie, whatever. And Daisy, that's what this is about? Your sex with McStevie? Izzy's like, wait, what?
You told Izzy. And throughout this whole scene.
And Izzy's like, no, actually, George told me.
Throughout this whole scene, though, like, Callie's, like, poking a finger in Meredith's face, and Meredith just keeps grabbing her wrist and, like, throwing it away. It's so funny. This scene, this version of Meredith might actually beat Meredith with a hammer. Like, if you could only have one of those scenes, I know, it's, like, Sophie's choice, but if you could only have one of those scenes, which one would you keep? I think I would keep this one. And then Izzy's like, maybe the guy that you slept with. And Callie's like, wow, I never thought of that.
Like, who told George? Literally anyone in the hospital, let's be honest. Again, gossip runs rampant in this hospital. Yeah. I'm surprised the chief doesn't know already.
And if you want to see a glorious screenshot, follow us on Twitter. Follow the podcast on Twitter, @GraysUncut, because I got this screenshot of Izzy with, like, these, like, horrified, like, wide eyes, and Meredith, who could not care less. It's peak Meredith.
I just love the, like, George thinks I betrayed him. I didn't. We were broken up. And their faces are just, like, whatever.
Yeah, their faces are like, we literally couldn't care less than we do right now.
Also, the sign behind Meredith, I think says rock on.
Rock on. Yeah, I know. And then Meredith goes, well, go tell George.
And Izzy's like, go tell someone who cares.
Yeah, exactly. And then when she finally leaves, Izzy looks back at Meredith with this, like, adorable smile. And she goes, dude, she went all cage fighter on you. And Meredith just, like, laughs and then rests her head on Izzy's shoulder. And it's honestly one of the most adorable scenes of the whole show.
What is that? Guitar for sale? Rock on.
That's been up for a long time. They've had that decoration for a while. Anyway. This is honestly probably one of the best scenes of season 3. But, like, step back for a minute and really just think about what happened. Like, the show kind of just brushes this off. But, like, what would have happened if Izzy wasn't there? Would Callie have, like, really tried to beat up Meredith? Like, what? Who is this woman?
I feel like what would happen, it would be, like, Meredith would be, like, physically injured from this, and then Callie would just have, like, all this, like, horrific karma from it. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, Meredith would just be, like, sitting in the hospital bed, like, oh, hey, Callie. And Callie's like, I got food poisoning or something. Like, my car got struck by lightning. Like, all this, like, random shit, and Meredith's just like, oh, that's awful. Who could have done that?
And then she breaks the fourth wall and stares into her soul. Anyway.
You know,
and then, so then we have this, like, George and Izzy scene, and there's this callback to, like, has she offered to iron your scrubs?
Mm-hmm. With Christina. Christina's also there.
Yeah, but that, I liked that. That was a callback way to 102. That was a good, I'm glad that, like, Grey's Anatomy, like, puts in the effort to put in lines like that.
And I feel like Izzy also, like, halfway in this scene, like, part of her, like, wants to mention, like, oh, hey, I kind of told your parents a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but she doesn't.
Like, she's, like, halfway between that and then halfway between, like, the whole, like, what she does say is, like, a strange doctor is operate like that, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like she's like, and my mom, is she driving you crazy? And Izzy's like, well, she might know a lot more than you probably told her. She's like, should I tell him about those things I said?
It'll come out.
He'll figure it out.
And I do like this part, too, because this is kind of like another example of Grey's Anatomy, like, calling into question, like, an ethical, like, an actual ethical real-life situation where Christina says, Dr. Hahn is an excellent surgeon. Your father is in great hands. Nothing else matters. And George says, you're wrong. There are a lot of people with fathers in this hospital, and it does matter to them who their doctor is.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that Grey's Anatomy is willing to, like, it's not even subtext anymore. Like, it's in the text now that they're saying that their characters, their main characters, are not moral people. And that's a brave choice to make them immoral.
Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting. And then I like kind of the, like, little fact of, like, Izzy not really getting it and being like, I didn't come back until I was ready. Like, Burke is ready, you know, like not understanding the full like impact of this. And then George going all like, Dark George.
Yeah, the Dark George.
You don't do anything about my parents. Your job is to watch, remember, and tell them all George's secrets. But she already did that.
Yeah, I do like this part where he goes, your job is to watch, remember, and then he immediately says sorry because he knows that he just hurt his best friend. But then it gets worse later.
Oh, yeah. And that's, I really like, this whole scene. I'm kind of for the Dark George. I like it. Yeah. It's kind of, it's interesting. But there's one scene that we haven't got to yet, but we will. And that's where all of a sudden it, like, turns for me. And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, it just feels wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, I'm also glad that they went there because I like that feeling a little bit. I don't know.
It's different, yeah.
Maybe I'm a masochist.
And then we get this fantastic thing. We're back with Janelle. We missed her. And Mark delivers this. I saw a guy once with half a chair leg in his chest. That was one hell of a splinter. What?
And the show just kind of like moves on from that way too fast. That was so funny. He's like, I once saw a guy with half a chair leg in his chest. And if you haven't watched the Grey's Anatomy spoof on YouTube, go do it right now. Pause this podcast, go to YouTube, type in Grey's Anatomy spoof. Click on the Mad TV spoof, watch it, and then continue. We'll give you a moment. Well, now that you're back from watching.
It's really weird warning you. Like, it's weird, but hilarious. There's some great moments. Anyway.
So, Janelle, it's come to the point now where patients have to tell the doctors to focus on medicine and not their personal lives. And Janelle says, can we focus here?
Which, thank you, Janelle.
You know what I just realized about Janelle? I feel like she could like fit in with the hospital. Like if she like left and went to like med school or something and then came back, it would like work. You know what I mean? Like I feel like she could be a character in this hospital. That's why I love her so much.
Mm-hmm. And then she delivers this line. So if I get hit by a car, get thrown through a window, have a big shard of glass in my heart, and my baby survives, that's pretty much a sign I should have this baby right, even without the father. And you're like, what the hell?
Yes, and every line that Mark and Addison say here have a double meaning, and it'll be revealed in 312. But Addison goes, everyone has a father. And then Mark says, not if she doesn't tell them. And Janelle reveals that the father cheated on her, and it's Alex that says makes him an ass doesn't mean you have to be one. And I don't want to like analyze that right now, but like we can't not mention it,
point it out, and kind of be like, think about this.
Yeah, just let that like not saute, marinate.
Let that saute.
So now we're on the bridge of Manpain, and Burke just talked to the chief. He reveals that the chief is planning to retire, and he is recommending to the board that they name Burke the next chief of surgery. So in between 102 and this episode, 309, what has changed in the chief's mind to recommend Burke for chief of surgery? And that's a bit of a rhetorical question, because the answer is Christina. Christina has changed Burke. And I think that's
arguably
beautiful.
His other choice was Derek, and Derek has gotten through a lot of shit.
That's true. That's true.
Clearly, his choices in life are questionable.
The chief's like a salty veteran. He's like, I'm so ready to retire, and my two choices are freaking Burke and Derek.
Yeah. Which also, I'm like, if you look at the attendings, he also has Addison. And I'm like,
oh, she's a woman. She can't be the chief.
You know what I mean? But I'm like, arguably, she is the best choice.
I mean, yeah. She's the queen of the earth. So, yeah.
I mean, the other choice is Mark, and that's oof.
I mean, don't even want to think about that. So then we come.
Would be getting his dry cleaning.
Yeah. We come back from commercial, and we get another Christina Burke scene. And,
well, it's like the continuation of that kind of.
Oh, yeah. And no, but this is the big scene. So this is the last big scene before they go into surgery together. And Burke is like not even able to listen to Christina because all that's on his mind is that he's going to be the chief of surgery at Seattle Grace Hospital. And Christina's like, why do you sound like that? And Burks goes, because I'm going to be chief of surgery at Seattle Grace Hospital. And mm-hmm. Christina's like, this is what you worked for. And then this part almost disturbed me when she like kneeled down before Burke, you know, it's almost like a knight or something, like pledging their service. It's like
weird, yeah.
And it like, it wasn't until like she kneeled down and he was like sitting there and he saw her like essentially like a pawn pledging service to her chief, you know, that like I was like, ew, like I don't know, I didn't like that at all, like that imagery. And the fact that I didn't like it was a good, like it was a good choice to put it in there.
I was about to say, I think it was put in there to make you get that kind of like, feeling.
It's supposed, you know, to make you uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Can you read this Burke line?
Oh, yeah. So he's talking about being chief, and he's like, I can't be chief, not now, not like this. Do you know how long I've wanted this? My entire career. And when I finally get it, there's blood on it. Which, interesting choice of words there. Mm-hmm. I had a tremor, and I didn't say anything. It's unimaginable. It's unethical. I crossed the line. Which is also interesting, the crossing the line, because that was the theme in the bomb episode. Crossing lines.
In the bomb episode?
Yeah, remember they were, that whole thing was like, there's a line on the OR floor. Or no.
No, that was 2:15.
Oh, Lord. All right.
You're close. You're one off. That was the picket line. The.
Yes.
Yeah.
That one. Okay. All right.
I'm proud of you. Good job. This scene, though, is so crucial for Burke's character, and I think the writers knew it. Because without this scene, Burke's reputation in the eyes of the average viewer of this show would have been so severely damaged that I don't think he would have been able to fully come back from it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it, like, reestablishes that Burke is a man of honor and morality and instead of becoming angry with him, this scene completely flips the narrative, like literally just in the nick of time, to make him almost like a victim, like a righteous man, like a victim.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's so interesting that like this is the thing that kind of causes him to start stressing. Because like earlier in the episode, I mean, it was Christina that was the one that was freaking out. And now he's like, no, this is awful. Why did we do this? Or, and then he even says like something about like, you dragged me across the line, you know?
And it says, you made us a team. And throughout this whole season, you'll get that image, like that word team, where it's like, we are, like, remember when Burke was like, we are a team. Like, mm-hmm. he said that to George, and now team is not a good thing. You mm-hmm. know, like he almost wishes that he wasn't. Was that him almost saying like, I wish I wasn't a part of this relationship with Christina, because if I didn't get involved with her, I probably, like, this humanity probably wouldn't have sunk in, or like I wouldn't be in this situation if I wasn't involved with Christina.
Yeah, I think partially. Mm-hmm. Well, and I feel like this scene is really like, it brings back that kind of like back and forth of like who is really at fault, because Burke seems to be blaming Christina, and he's like, you dragged me across the line. Like, you're the one who started this. You're the one that, like, mm-hmm. made us a team. And then she's like, no, I did what you needed me to do. And, like, I stood there and helped you and have done this and, like, helped keep your secret and do all this stuff and, like, helped you operate and be Burke or whatever. And, like, you know, it's, like, this interesting kind of, like, again, like, both of them are at fault, and none of them are at fault, you know?
Mm. And they both had good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
The road to hell is paved with good intentions. And then there's this line where Christina says, when you got shot, I walked away. And you just can't let go of that, can you? Well, I'm sticking now. I'm sticking. And then Burke says the line that kind of ends it. When he says, there is no team. There is only me, once again, making up for your emotional shortcomings.
God.
And you know what, though? Like, he's not wrong.
It's just like, ugh. It also makes me so, I don't know, I'm so interested in the fact that, like, he can't see that I think, honestly, Christina was trying to do something good for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And he doesn't see it that way at all.
But then it's, like, so Christina of her to say, okay, I don't think we should say anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, wow. Like,
just shut down.
I love her. Such a unique character. And so we go from that really tense scene to the scene that we've been hinting at this whole episode that was honestly kind of hard for me to watch. There's this old man at the nurse's station that has a leather jacket like draped over his shoulder, and he's wearing like one of those old like mailman hats, and it's probably future George. Anyway,
it's arguably like the same pattern and colors as the shirt George is wearing, but anyway,
yeah, that's George in the future.
And then Miss O'Malley, oh, look how wrinkled he is. Thank God I brought the travel iron.
Yes.
This woman brought a travel iron. Like, this woman is Izzy.
I love her.
Anyway, so...
Oh my God, we saw future George. This is future Izzy. Brilliant.
Oh my God, yes. And they kind of are trying to let George down easy and say, like, we want Burke, not Dr. Hahn. But, like, when Mrs. O'Malley's, like, first with you and Meredith and then with you and Callie, and then George is like, Izzy! And the way Katherine Heigl looks up, she's like, I thought they knew. That line, oh, my God. Katherine Heigl is, like, killing it.
That's the thing about this scene that makes it so hard to watch is it starts out good and, like that, like, them joking, like, funny, and then all of a sudden it's just, like, that one line that's just like stabbing with like a knife, you know, like he like stabs her and then like twists it and you're like, ugh.
And then he just goes, get out, which is a good movie. And then Izzy says, what, George, you don't talk like that to anyone. Dad, did Dr. Stevens tell you that she's on probation because the last time she was allowed to interact with a patient, someone died?
And there it is, twisting the knife.
And I was like, ugh. And Izzy, honestly, like, Izzy is, like, really taking the high road in this episode. Mm-hmm. And on so many occasions.
Because I think, like, in some sense, she understands that George is under a lot of stress. And, like, and I think in some kind of sense, like, she knows that, like, George would never say, like, something like that to hurt her.
Of course.
And, you know? But it's still, I mean, the fact that, like, she is able to, like, keep, like, a calm, like, steady mind and just kind of be like, it's really great to see both of you, and like walk out and like not say anything is like,
I think that shows the depth of her love for George. And I honestly think a lesser show would have had her take the low road in this occasion for drama, but this is not a lesser show. This is an amazing show.
Yeah.
So now we get Burke sitting in that, like, that same room where a lot of the men go to reminisce over their tragedies. And he doesn't have a blue ball anymore. He has a green ball. Derek walks in, and Derek is just so upset because nobody will do anything for him in this episode. He has to do everything himself. And Burke goes Shepherd, and Derek goes Burke. And I thought, is that a callback to the bomb episode?
Maybe.
And then Alex also comes in and wants Burke to operate with him. And then Derek delivers this line like a child. He goes, well, you can't do both surgeries at the same time.
Freaking Derek. I also love, like, I think the thing that you're really supposed to get out of this, and I'm pretty sure they mentioned in the Grey Matter blog, but you're supposed to almost get the impression that Burke was about to say something to Derek before Alex barged in.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is super interesting.
Yeah. I agree.
I almost wonder, like, what he would have said, but that's for another day, another time.
Well, and it's almost like maybe that's the point, is that you don't.
Yeah, like, we don't know.
The mystery box is always more satisfying than knowing what's in the mystery box.
Yeah.
So, finally, a song. You and I Are a Gang of Losers by The Deers. Weirdest music video I've watched in a while.
I also love, can I just go back to this one line? And so, like, Hahn's gonna scrub in with Shepherd, Burke's gonna go with Janelle, and I love this little line from Alex, everybody gets a surgery except me. And you're like, you did that to yourself, Alex. Okay, but anyway,
why doesn't Alex get to scrub in with Janelle?
Just because he's with Mark, and Mark's not scrubbing in, and Mark doesn't give a shit about him, and so he can't scrub in.
Oh, true. Okay. Yeah. So then we get this scene where Callie just really wants to talk to George, and George is like, no. And at least she gets to say that, like, she gets to say her piece a little bit. George is not ready to hear it, though. But she just wants George to know that she didn't betray him, which nobody really cares, including George, in this scene.
But I think it's supposed to be, like, this huge thing because the theme of this episode is betrayal, and there's so much betraying going on. And so I think it's really interesting that they have this short scene of Callie being like, I didn't betray you, George, and him, like, being a little, like walking away from it and not being, like, this huge moment. So I think that was kind of interesting on their part.
But I also wonder if George is just like, yeah, you think you didn't betray me, but you kind of did. Like, mm-hmm. Do you think George is thinking that?
I don't know. I think right now he's just so more, like, focused on everything else that is going on.
Or even if it's not a, like, even if it objectively isn't a betrayal, if it feels like one, mm-hmm. isn't it still one? Question yeah. mark. That's interesting, too. Now, a scene with Mrs. Dickerson, who just is like a barnacle. She just will not fall off. And she does say this line, if I had sided with my daughter, Larry would have felt so betrayed. And I was like, wow, good job, Grey's Anatomy. Like, this storyline shows us the flip side of betrayal. It shows us that perhaps sometimes there are far worse consequences than betraying somebody. It could cause more pain in the long run.
Which is super interesting and total Grey's Anatomy to give you both sides, you know?
Of course, yeah. And so now we're in the meat of the episode.
Yes, yeah. So Burke removes this humongous shard of glass from her heart.
How did that even...
How did she not die? I don't...
I flew.
I don't understand.
I don't either. I mean, this thing is huge. It looks like a shiv.
It looks like a knife. Like, it's mad. How did she not die? I don't understand. How did, also did they not notice this? Because, like, it had to, like, pierce or something. How did they not notice that she had this, like, gaping? I don't know.
Meredith was, like, almost ready to put in a chest tube. And so then there's this, like, really tense moment where Burke is like, you know what, Dr. Yang, move to the other side of the table. And you're like, whoa. And anyway, we cut over to
I think just one thing to note about that scene is it's supposed to be like this huge moment of Burke basically like severing the team.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, that's true. So this other surgery is happening simultaneously to Burke and Christina's just down the hallway.
Which also, interestingly enough, also brings back kind of themes of the bomb episode, because in that episode as well, we had Burke and Derek doing surgeries in like, you know, simultaneously in the different ORs.
Except with flipped interns. That's weird. Except with the interns flipped. Meredith was with Burke and Christina was with Derek.
True, yeah.
Huh.
Interesting. This is fascinating that it's, like, bringing up a lot of these themes from, like, the bomb episode, which, like, arguably, like, they're very different episodes, you know? Like, but it's interesting. But.
Yeah. Fascinating. And Han is like, just groovy. They're going to be so jealous back at Seattle Press. And Derek's like, why is that? Scrubbing in with Derek Shepherd, the genius who saved Preston Burke when he almost got his arm shot off. Major jealousy.
And Derek's like, thank you. Finally, someone appreciates me.
It's like,
and
oh Meredith my God, like, Han. Meredith is like, thanks for nothing, Dr. Han. As if his ego wasn't bigger than his freaking hair.
Yeah.
Wow.
His hair. But it's also interesting because he also didn't fix Burke's
exactly. Hand. No, exactly. And that's kind of like the dark humor of Grey's Anatomy, is that it's like she calls Derek a genius for fixing Burke's hand, but everyone in the audience knows that he didn't fix Burke's hand. So what does that mean? Is he not a genius then? Mm-hmm. You know? It's just kind of interesting.
The way Derek's like, did you hear that? I'm a genius. And Meredith is like, shut up.
Like, Meredith, of course you are.
You know what I mean? She's just like, ugh, I need to shave your head, get rid of your ego.
Yeah, his ego lives in his hair. It's one and the same.
Meredith barges in to Burke's OR and is like, we need Burke. And Burke's like, okay.
Burke leaves. Let's just skip to this scene where Christina's following him into the hallway, and Burke goes into the OR, Christina stops in the hallway, and Meredith turns, and she goes, what, do you think Burke can't operate without you? And then they just, like, stare at each other, and she goes, oh my God, Christina, he can't operate without you. And the episode does, like, some of its best camera work here. we have Christine in the foreground, Meredith blurry in the background. Then when Christina turns to look at Meredith, the camera swipes, like, or it, like, sweeps behind Christina right at the moment of realization for Meredith. And so it's like the camera movement helps communicate to the audience that Meredith just figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
And it aids the dialogue. Brilliant.
It's cool. And it's like in the same hallway again, where like in the bomb episode they were like moving the cart, they had that kind of moment between the two of them earlier, like in that episode. It's super these parallels, man.
Grey's Anatomy. You're welcome, guys. And Christina goes, if you ever gave a crap about me, you will shut your mouth and go back in the OR.
Yeah, so then we cut back into the OR with Burke, Derek, and Han, and Meredith is like intently staring at Burke's hands. And Derek is just like so offended by this. He's like, is my brain not interesting enough for you, Dr. Gray? And she's like, shut the hell up.
I just love that. I love how offended he is by it. And he goes, focus, Dr. Gray, focus.
He's like, look at me.
These two are made for each other.
I love it. And then so it's kind of like these little like things between like Christina's freaking out in the other OR because she's like, Burke should have been back by now, and freaking out.
They're just trying to raise the tension, which it worked really well.
Oh yeah, it does. He finally comes back. They're taking her off of bypass, and the heart basically like explodes, not really, and squirts blood all over Christina.
And the production here is brilliant because it's just still and silent for like just a hair long enough to make it uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And they knew exactly how long to ratchet the intensity, which is nice. And here's my question to you. Burke's hand doesn't seem to be tremoring here. Like, he is squeezing it, you know? Like, he's flexing it.
Mm-hmm.
But is this almost so... Is this episode, is it possible that it's so much inside Christina's head that Burke may actually be fine? Because he does complete this surgery without Christina. He completes it fine.
He did the other surgery fine.
He did the other surgery fine. He is squeezing his hand. I will give her that. But is it possible that it's because we, the audience, are seeing this episode through Christina's eyes that we think it's more intense than it is? Because Burke even says, this is a known complication. It happens. I don't need you for this. He goes, this happens. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, I never thought about that, but I was just like, is it possible that, like, we're just inside the mind of an unreliable narrator?
Mm-hmm. Which also just makes it interesting, too, because you're really then seeing basically how this has destroyed Christina's mind, you know?
Like, she's not even able to see things clearly anymore.
Yeah, or, like, even, like, I mean, how persistent she is and is like, what do I do? Burke, what is this? And you're like, that's not Christina at all.
When it's like, know? And Burke is like, just wait a minute. And she goes, we don't have a moment. And Burke's like, yes, we do. You know, it's like, just calm down.
Mm-hmm. And so you really just see her unraveling in this scene. Yeah. And it's great.
With blood all over her face, which just always adds something. Like, I think Becca knows this about me, but like my jam for like cop shows is... Every once in a while, they throw in that scene where, like, the cop is, like, face-to-face with the bad guy, and the bad guy gets, like, shot in the head or something by a sniper, and then, like, the blood just, like, smears down the face of, like, the detective. I don't know what it is about those kind of scenes, but I'm like, yes, give me more. I just like that. Whatever.
That's terrifying.
I know, it's terrifying. So the song Nine Crimes by Damien Rice starts playing, and let me just tell you, this song has been stuck in my head since I watched this episode. This song is so... There's been
another song stuck in your head.
Is so true. It's so perfectly used. It's the 10th crime. Mm-hmm. It's a crime how well this song was used.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. And then
I love this kind of like camera work as she like runs down the hospital, run down the hall and like into the chief's office. And you're just like, oh shit.
But you know what I love about this, particularly, like, this whole concept for an episode, is Christina and Burke weren't put in this, like, crazy once in a lifetime surgery. They didn't make this like outrageous, sensationalized surgery.
Replace her heart.
Instead, they crafted a far more likely and therefore more compelling circumstance. And the circumstance is it was a normal day with a known complication, and that's what took them down, implying that it was only a matter of time because it happens.
Mm-hmm. I also like this kind of idea because the next scene, Burke goes into the chief's office and is like, we need to talk. And then it's like revealed that like Christina told. And I like that kind of imagery of like, not only did that surgery break Christina down, but it also in a way broke Burke down because I think he was going to tell the chief as well, you know?
Do you think there's anything there with like the chief caught or like Christina turned herself in red-handed because
literally.
Of... literally. Yeah. Do you think there's anything there?
I think it's just kind of like a cool, like, another touch from the writers.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I just wanted to mention real quick is, do you remember Digby, who got himself shot in season one? The scene where he died, it was like...
Did he shoot himself?
No, his friend shot him.
Okay, whatever.
Do you remember in season one, the scene where he is dying and they slowly just, like... They fade out the dialogue and they fade in this like really like soft, beautiful, like calming song over this like hectic, chaotic scene. It reminded me of that, where like this song, Nine Crimes, is so soft and in a way calming. It's eerie, that's for sure. And if you listen to the lyrics, it's kind of creepy, but it's soft and it's over top this scene that is like hectic and crazy. It's just such a Grey's Anatomy thing for them to do.
Mm-hmm. And Isaiah Washington does a good job of kind of painting that almost betrayed look on his face when he looks at Christina in the chief's office, you know? Mm-hmm. His like facial expressions are really great.
Such a iconic shot of her in that hallway. Just everything about the way it was framed and blocked and iconic.
Yeah, so then we have this short little scene where you can kind of see Burke is being yelled at by the chief in his office, and Christina's outside, and Dr. Han just comes up and is like, you're lucky, you know, to study under Burke. If your little intern brain can retain any of what he teaches you, maybe you can become half the surgeon he is, and that's pretty damn good. I like that.
And I do like the last part. If you tell him I told you this, he'll never believe you.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, this scene, I guess, is the only scene that adds anything to her character. But since we're, like, starving for more to her character than just, like, you know, the master of bitchcraft at Hogwarts School of Bitchcraft and Wizardry, it's just nice to have that scene there.
Half of me was like, that's amazing. And then also half was like, is that really the best you could come up with? But I also just like how we have this scene. Like, Han, again, has been completely dogging on Burke the entire episode. And she finally, like, says something nice about him. And it's literally while he's being, like, reamed by the chief for lying.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting.
Which is another, like, it almost reminds me of what she said about Derek. Which would have been a genuine compliment. Except for the fact that we all know that he didn't fix. He's like, shit. That he didn't fix Burke, and we all know that Burke is not, she's giving him this compliment when it's like, he doesn't deserve any compliments right now. So, like, Han's lines are ironic in this episode, and I kind of appreciate that.
And then we go to the scene that I think all of us were waiting for when we realized that Alex and Addison were going to be on the same patient. And it's such, I've missed them.
Yeah.
This pairing is fantastic.
Well, and then Addison says it takes more than a well-meaning speech to get a girl to make a commitment like that. Just remember that line, that's all I'm saying. Addison goes, you're a decent guy, Alex. I'd hate to see Sloan beat that out of you.
I love that.
And I feel like we've really been in tune with this Addison-Alex thing since 301. She gives him a similar look in 301. Mm-hmm. And I find them to be such an amazing pair up because they almost balance each other out in growth. I mean, they also balance each other out in sass, but, like, whenever one grows, the other also seems to grow, mm-hmm. which is amazing. I don't know. It's like we see Alex as more than just the Mark Sloan proxy. We see Addison as in, like, more of a complex and sympathetic light. But most mm-hmm. importantly, in my opinion, if they ever did become a romantic couple, they would put a interesting new taste, new spin on that boring and overused cliche of, ooh, the tough bad boy does a 180 and becomes a good man for the bubbly, good-natured model. It's like, snooze. I don't know. It's just like...
But they're an interesting take on it.
Yes. It's like, it's not the opposite, but it's like a new spin on it, which is so Grey's Anatomy. So I'm here for it. I would like to see them together.
And I like how we're discovering things about Alex's character through Addison, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like all the other interns, we've learned things about their characters, like, with each other. And he's kind of the one that's, like... He's not completely in, like, the intern OTP yet, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's so, like, he's kind of an outsider, and so is she.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I like it.
I am pro Alex and Addison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we get this little quote from the Grey Matter blog, and it says, okay, I know I'm not the only one looking for signs that Alexson and Addison might go all Grey's Anatomy on each other. I love seeing those two characters together, and I love that Addison can see the good in Alex that others, particularly Mark in this episode, don't see.
Hmm.
And then we get another great scene in the elevator, which also has this weird poster of, like, Run Wild.
With, like, a moose on it, yeah.
What?
And Derek's like, I thought you were my friend. And Burke goes, I thought you were my surgeon.
Mm-hmm. And what does it tell you that Burke is almost, in this episode, seeming to blame almost everyone else for his situation?
When you asked that question, like, my immediate answer was, Burke seems to blame everyone else for the situation he's in because he blames himself. Because mm-hmm. deep down... He does blame himself, and so that's why he's blaming everyone else.
Interesting.
And also, from the very beginning, that line where Meredith goes, if you tell me, maybe I can help.
Mm-hmm.
Derek says something similar to that. He goes, I would have helped you if you'd told me, you know?
Yeah.
And then Derek's saying, I thought you were my friend. I mean, Meredith and Christina will certainly make it out of this. As still being mm-hmm. friends, but maybe not Derek and Burke, not really. So mm-hmm. one of those friendships is stronger than the other.
Mm-hmm. And I love how, like, after all of this stuff goes down, we of course get the, like, obligatory chief standing in front of a full surgical board, you know?
Mm-hmm. Of course he's standing in front of the surgical board.
Yeah, so, like, the Grey Matter blog kind of says that we don't know exactly what Christina says to the chief, which we all know that we love, but we know that she beat Burke to it, and that breaks Burke's heart. And probably the chief's as well. He was going to step down, go back to Adele. He'd chosen a successor. That was a huge decision. And so it's kind of like that whole, like, now what?
We didn't see or we didn't hear what Christina said to the chief because we don't need to.
And I kind of like that mystery of, like, what exactly mm-hmm. did she say?
Yeah. So the song New Day by Kate Havnevik starts playing, and this song is weird. And it's perfect to end this episode because there's, like, this weird, like, the beginning of it sounds like this, like, untuned violin or something. It's just amazing. It's, like, eerie and weird, and I love it. And mm-hmm. Meredith meets Christina on a bench outside the hospital, and mm-hmm. Christina just says, it was both of our idea to rob the bank. It was both of us. And Meredith mm-hmm. goes, I know. But, like, keep in mind throughout this whole season, just do not forget bank robbery, getaway car. Those motifs will run throughout the whole season. So just remember that.
And Christina just goes, I just couldn't do it anymore.
And Meredith says, you did the right thing.
Mm-hmm. And then Christina delivers this line. Then how come I walked across the parking lot and realized I can't go home? Where am I supposed to go? And, like, that's to, like, where I said, like, not only is this episode the end of that secret, but it's seemingly the end of their relationship as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's not until this moment right here that Christina has, like, realized how much she actually does depend on Burke. Like, emotionally, but also, like, she doesn't even know where she lives now.
Mm-hmm. I also love the fact that you would think from this scene that the next obvious solution would be Meredith bringing Christina home with her. But no, Meredith is like, that's unfortunate. Bye. And, like, leaves.
I know. Christina's like, where am I supposed to go? And Meredith is like, that is a tough one. I'm going to go home to Derek.
Like, that little part there, because, like, I don't know, just from anyone watching this, like, that scene would logically lead, like, to have a scene of, like, Christina coming into their, like, into the intern house, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't. Spoiler, yeah. That's not what happens.
Meredith makes Christina go home to Burke. Anyway, but I do like this very Grey's Anatomy mm-hmm. idea of you did the right thing, and it doesn't necessarily make everything all right.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes the right thing isn't necessarily the thing that, like, makes everything, like, completely better, and, like,
mm-hmm.
it's not always rainbows and bright and cheery.
Mm-hmm. Bright and shiny. So George and Izzy in the intern OTP house in the living room, and Izzy essentially talking to George, like, she's pissed. She, like, has trouble meeting his eyes. And he has trouble meeting her eyes throughout this whole scene. And Izzy goes, you don't get to bring Denny up to me ever again. And George goes, I'm sorry. Don't try to apologize right now. Not yet. And then she goes, maybe tomorrow.
I like how she says that. Which
is a great sentiment.
Mm-hmm. And then she steals his pasta, which is just fantastic.
Which mirrors him stealing, or her stealing his coffee earlier in the morning. And the fact that George doesn't steal it back, it means something. Like, it's just kind of like, oh, we're still friends. And
mm-hmm.
like, the fact that she is still stealing his stuff means that it's like, I will forgive you.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cute. I love them.
Yep. And we start the episode in a similar place where we left off, with Meredith and Derek in bed.
We end it.
You guys knew what I meant. And we have this, like, Derek, you washed his hands all through surgery. You knew. And, like, ugh.
Well, let's just do it. Do you want to just do the dialogue?
Sure.
I can't say anything. There are things that Christina told me. She's my friend. I can't say anything.
No, that's not how this works. How could you know what you know and suspect it and not tell me?
You cleared him for surgery, Derek. How did you not know? You can't be angry with me. She's my best friend. And right or wrong, she...
What?
She was there when you weren't.
Which?
And that's the last piece of dialogue of this whole
mm-hmm.
episode, but...
I also have a question that I kind of brought up to Emily yesterday when we were talking, but I wanted to kind of bring it up here and say, we never get clarification of if Meredith ever told Derek when she found out, because this whole thing, like, I almost halfway wonder if he thinks that Christina told her that morning
mm-hmm.
or something, and she kept it a secret all day. And so I wonder, like, because I think almost in a way, like, would that matter? Like, because she told Meredith right before surgery. So, like, what is she going to do? Like, he's in there, like, about to, like, help out and, like, walk in and be like, you can't operate. Like, what is she going to do, you know?
Right. And I think the point of Meredith not clarifying that to Derek is kind of her almost in a way saying,
it doesn't matter.
I would have kept the secret had she told me in the morning. Yeah. Because,
like, it doesn't matter she's when my she friend. Told me.
Yeah, because even if she had told me that morning, I wouldn't have said anything.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, but, like, the beauty of this scene is that I feel like Derek actually does get a taste of his own medicine. He feels mm-hmm. betrayed by Meredith and by Burke. I mean, he's, like, really hurt by them in this scene. Mm-hmm. And by Meredith saying that, like, she was there, like, she's basically siding with Christina. That's her mm-hmm. basically telling him, I trust her more than I trust you. And you know how hurt you feel right now? You know that feeling that you have? What you did to me by not telling me about Addison was actually worse. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also saying, like, I'm not over that betrayal yet.
I was about to say, that's kind of the cool thing, is because we have a lot of, like, fresh betrayals in this episode, and then you get that little hint of, like, Derek betrayed Meredith, you know, like, all those episodes ago. And yeah, things are better, like, they're together, but that's not something that she just, you know, like, that's just fixed.
Gone. Yeah. And then they have this, like, inaudible moment where they essentially forgive each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love this because they've been holding off and saying, no sex, no sex. And this is, like, of all moments to choose to stop waiting, you know, and do it, like, it's this mm-hmm. moment. And it's the fact that it's not the perfect moment, and the fact that it's, like, out of, like, a desire to be, like, to reconnect almost, to be like, she was there when you weren't, and Derek is like, well, I'm here now. Like, there's beauty in it. It's like this dark,
it's twisted. Yeah.
It's like dark and twisty, but beauty mm-hmm. all in one. Yeah. And it's like, that's, there was no other way I would have wanted it, you know?
Mm-hmm. And then we get the short scene to end the episode, which is just Christina arriving home to find Burke pacing in their room. And he kind of, like, walks up and then just, like, shuts the door in her face.
Like, literally slams the door in his in her face. And he was wearing beige. The answer is yes. And so that's the end of the episode. So let me just read this real quick. In some ways, betrayal is inevitable. When our bodies betray us, surgery is often the key to recovery. When we betray each other, the path to recovery is less clear. We do whatever it takes to rebuild the trust that was lost. And then there are some wounds, some betrayals that are so deep, so profound, that there is no way to repair what was lost. And when that happens, there's nothing left to do but wait.
So we have this huge, like, quote.
Excerpt, yeah.
Yeah, from the Grey Matter vlog, which, again, a little thing, you should go read it, but it says, Shonda wanted one big episode about betrayal. She got it. And so we have all kinds of betrayal. A patient whose lover betrayed her, another patient whose body betrayed him, Callie feeling betrayed by Meredith about the mixed steamy sex, George feeling Izzy betrayed him with his parents, Meredith not telling Derek about Burke's tremor, George going to the Denny card with Izzy, etc. At the wheel, driving this betrayal bandwagon is Christina and Burke.
And me.
Think back over the course of this season. It makes your head spin how many of our people were betrayed because of it. Bailey, Richard, which, ew. Derek, Meredith, George, everyone. Take a number and get in line. The thing is, Christina and Burke know this, and it is killing them, and so it has to end.
And then it continues saying, choice and circumstance got them into this. They became a team, and the team piled up victories in surgery after surgery. They saved lives, lost none, which is important for next episode. But the cost outside surgery kept going. The walls started closing in on Christina. She may be part robot, but she's also part human. Love that line.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. She's exhausted, scared, and trapped. And it gets worse every day. Burke is a man of such integrity, even if he believes he is recovered. And he absolutely does. Not being completely forthright with Derek or Richard or Bailey or anyone is wrong. He's betrayed all of them, and it eats away at who he really is. And so it has to end. And so when you asked earlier, that's what I was referring to, was that Burke, like, according to the writer of this episode, Burke actually believes that he recovered and that his tremor recovered.
Mm-hmm.
But he is a man of such honor that not being truthful about something that happened in the past is too much for him. So seriously, count as zero.
Unfortunately.
I know. And so there are three patients here. I just realized I didn't actually rank them. So this is going to be a surprise for you as we go through.
You did not.
Yeah. Your number three, wanted to go?
Mine is Harold O'Malley, because, like, obviously love him. I like that kind of storyline. But for me, his big moment hasn't come yet. I don't know. I feel mm-hmm. like this this episode was about the other characters more.
Because
he didn't, like, I don't know. It was more about, like, their surgeries and their patients. And, like, he was in it, but it was more about, like, George's decisions and not, like, him as a patient.
Yeah, he's my number three as well. Because all of the moments that surrounded him that had to do with betrayal had nothing to do with him. It was mostly between George and Izzy and George and Callie. So,
So the last two patients, Larry and Janelle, I felt like we're almost on even grounds in terms of, like, they both kind of brought the same kind of senses to the betrayal theme and everything. And so I put number two as Larry because I just love Janelle.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. Like, if Larry and Janelle are, like, essentially even, you know, tied for one, then if I had to choose, Janelle was more enjoyable for me. Yeah. Mrs. Dickerson was annoying as fuck. And so, I put Janelle as number one simply for the, I think I might be parked in a red zone.
Oh my God. But this episode was kind of difficult because, like, yeah, the patients contributed to the theme, but so much more of this episode was about the doctors and not the patients. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, they definitely took a backseat in this episode.
Yeah, which is fine.
Yeah. Whatever.
Every once in a while, you need one of those.
Yeah.
I do not have a make one change. I don't even know. No. This episode was crafted more like a piece of art than
Like a serious make one change? Not in a while.
At least not in a while.
We should arguably take away this thing and only mention it if there actually is a make one change.
Maybe we should. All right.
We'll debate it.
So next week, maybe we're talking that'll be about our make one episode. To get rid of the make one change section. Next week, we're talking about season 3, episode 10, Don't Stand Too Close to Me, written by Carolina Paez.
Sure.
Paez, and directed by Seth Mann. If you want to get in touch with us, you can on Twitter. The account for the podcast is @GraysUncut. For me, it's @Hazard_Emily. And for Becca, it's @Anderson_Becca. If you want to leave a longer question or comment, go ahead and hit up our Gmail, which is graysanatomyuncut@gmail.com. We have a website where all the episodes are posted, which is graysanatomyuncut.home.blog. And if you would also be so kind as to rate and review us on iTunes, that would be amazing. We check that at least once a week. So that'd be great.
And tag us in things on Twitter, too. We've been getting some Twitter attention, and it's been kind of cool, kind of nice. So thank you for that, and keep doing it. We enjoy it.
And send us questions. Yeah, send us questions and stuff.
We love it.
And the offer still stands. Every time somebody rates us and gives us a review on iTunes, I will give you a shout-out. And you can even choose which voice I give you that shout-out in.
Nobody wants that choice. I'm kidding.
All right, so I can't wait.
See ya.
See you later. Bye-bye.